Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I'm your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Joined by the full crew this evening and a special guest, we have the man, the myth, the legend, the useful human, Arif Hassan with us tonight. What's going on, Arif?
Hey, man. Hey, you listen to my podcast. That's cool.
Yeah, most definitely. And everyone else is also here. JR, what's going on, my man?
What's going on?
Miles, Yanka, what's happening?
Oh, I don't get my own cameo? Oh, okay.
Nah, I'm good.
I'm good, Jason. Thank you.
Well, I am glad to hear that, Miles. Very glad to hear it. Yanka, how about yourself, man?
You know, just chilling. I'm actually in the process of moving right now, moving right down the hallway. So I'm just packing up all my stuff, getting ready to leave.
Well, that is a very
That being said, I was curious, what is the best concert y'all have ever been to? For me, it probably would be a toss-up between Chance the Rapper and Tori Kelly.
You didn't even really introduce the bit, so Arif really has no idea what's happening.
What was
now.
That being said? Like,
so every pod,
there's no connection. That's fine. I'm just like, why did you even attempt to connect the fact that you were moving to the concert question? You could have just this is the question of the day.
My connections are randomness, Arif. So you got to read between the no lines that don't exist. So,
oh, that's entertaining. You write like a 5-year-old anime. That's great.
The real question is over under 10 minutes of how long Prince stays sitting down during the pod.
So you just get up and walk around? Is that?
Oh yeah, he'll go take out the trash.
I'm always on the move, Arif.
He'll go start moving his stuff. He'll drive to the store quick.
Yeah, I'm actually trying to see how, like, if I could drive to the airport one day and hop on a plane and get to JR before the end of the podcast. It'll need to be a really long podcast, but I think.
Yeah, where are you? Are you in Missouri? Where are you?
I'm in North Carolina.
Close enough.
Yeah. Like, I'm convinced Yanka works for Uber or something.
No, Mitch Leitner was talking about working for Bite Squad. I actually was driving him around. He actually wasn't doing any driving at all. So,
well, all right. We are.
Anyways, y'all's favorite concerts, man.
Completely derailed. Arif, we will start with you. You are the guest. Favorite concert of all time.
I haven't been to a ton of concerts. It's probably the Kaiser Chiefs, Foo Fighters, Weezer concert. That was back when I liked Weezer, and they weren't, like, garbage. But, yeah, I mean, the Foo Fighters is really kind of the centerpiece because Dave Grohl was just an amazing concert. Phenomenal.
Okay. I feel like JR is probably going to go in a different way. JR, Foo Fighters for you, JR, or something different?
So the best concert I've ever been to was in Charlotte. It was Young Jeezy. He's like my favorite rapper ever, and it was just an amazing concert.
Okay, Miles, how about you, man?
I don't really go to concerts. I've only been to a handful.
Dave Matthews Band.
I don't like Dave Matthews Band.
Is that anymore or
Matchbox 20?
I've never been a fan of Dave Matthews Band ever. I always thought they're overrated, but we don't need to get into it.
You guys are really trying to tap into Miles White's side.
But Miles White like me? This is great. We could talk about 90s music all day.
Yeah, right. I'll give you one you wouldn't expect. You might not have even heard of James Bay.
I haven't heard of that.
It's like contemporary or whatever, but we played it for my wedding. It was me and my wife's song. One of his songs. His concert was good, but I don't really go to concerts, so.
And for the listeners, you might not know, but Miles' wife is actually sitting just right outside the frame, so he's scoring points right now while he's on the podcast. That's well played, Miles. Well done. For myself, I went to see Outkast in Atlanta when they finished up their festival run 3 years ago, Centennial Park. That was by far, without a doubt, the best concert that I have ever been to. Yeah, that was crazy. Crazy down there.
Your age.
Hey, man. Outkast ain't too old, man.
An Outkast concert is showing your age? What is this?
Oh, JR talking smack about Outkast and dropped right off the pod again.
The pod knew, so you gotta go.
Yeah, you came in here talking about Outkast and the pod just kicked you right out, JR.
Yeah.
All right, well, we will go ahead, and we got Arif here to talk about football, so we'll go ahead and start doing that. And Arif, like you said, when we were off air there, we have a rough outline of a plan, and so Miles brought up this topic that he wanted to discuss with you. It's the backup market for quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, we're looking at the Colts situation and how poorly they seem to have planned for a life without Andrew Luck, and we wanted to get your takes on, I guess, hey, why teams are so bad at planning for this. And then I guess that kind of rolls into, you know, the Vikings and where we are a little bit with our QB situation. So we were looking for your take on that.
I don't know, like, why teams are necessarily bad at it. Some of it has to do with, there's actually a really funny story. I forgot what book it was in. I think it was Games That Changed the Game with Ron Jaworski, about them actually asking the Colts, like, some reporter was asking, like, hey, so how come, I think it was Jim Sorge at the time, how come Jim Sorge's not getting any reps? And Tom Moore, the offensive coordinator, turns to the guy and says, look, if 18 goes down, wait, can I swear on this? Is this, are we good to swear on this podcast?
Man, we try to be family friendly, but you go ahead.
You're good to go.
No, I'll paraphrase. It's fine. If 18 goes down, we're boned, and we don't practice boned. I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, some of it just is like, a backup quarterback, you've basically lost the season. I'm not really sure if that's really the way that teams should think about it, but I'm sure that some teams think of it that way. Other than that, like, the backup quarterback market is not so bad that a team like the Colts of a quarterback coming off of an injury, or a team like the Ravens, who are supposed to be pretty well known for developing quarterbacks anyway, should be, you know, completely left barren when an injury occurs. And even more, they should be more open to trading assets for a backup quarterback, because it's always useful to, you know, win games and stuff. I'm not really sure. But, you know, we all know that there's a backup quarterback available out there who, I guess he's too good to be a backup. He's a starter, which is why Seattle wouldn't sign him. I just feel like that's a pretty easy solution. So really, there should be no penalty this year to being bad at figuring out who your backup quarterback is going to be, because there's a starting quality quarterback just sitting on the market.
So Miles, did that cover everything you wanted, or do you have any follow-ups for Arif on that one?
Well, yeah, I mean, just to touch on, like, the Vikings situation itself, I think they kind of are the perfect definition of going into a season thinking that you have your established starting quarterback in place. He's young, so hasn't really been injured too often in his career. And then you have an old veteran guy like Sean Hill, who you're okay with being a backup for a game or two, but you know, if for some reason you lose your quarterback for more than 4, 5, 6-plus games, you know, you're kind of – expecting that to be more of like a lost season, because you don't expect to win half or three-fourths of those games. That quarterback's not going to win you a lot of games. So, but then, you know, yeah, the horrific injury Teddy had last year, and then all of a sudden Vikings go into panic mode and they go and trade for a guy like Sam Bradford. They gave up, you know, a future asset and a first round pick, and, you know, the future fourth round pick too. And then it all goes down from there. And I feel like, to me, you see, as another organization, you see a situation like that where you have an established quarterback, but then your backup you don't really trust to win you games long term, at least for a full season, why you wouldn't try to resolve some of that in the offseason, whether it's through the draft, free agency. You know, like, you know, Reeve said, there's that quarterback that's out there right now where a team like the Colts could go pick him up and they could win some games with him while Andrew Luck's still on the mend. Because it's not sounding like Andrew Luck's going to be ready for week one, but Scott Tolzien's not going to win you games. they're not good enough for him to not do a lot for them to win, for them to win games either. So it's not like they have an established really good running game or offensive line or defense for that matter. So they need a quarterback that can help win them games. Scott Tolzien is not going to do that. So why would you go into a season, like Arif said, after your quarterback has been injured and you know he is still injured, and just kind of be like, oh, Scott Tolzien, you know, we're okay with being boned again and wasting another year of, you know, young talent that you have with guys like T.Y. Hilton, Dante Moncrief, and, you know, Andrew Luck in a sense too, just because of that. But I don't know.
Well, I think you just described, I guess part of the reason is that when you describe the Colts as having no defense, no O-line, right. And then you really could only name two players on the team that weren't Andrew Luck that were any good. I mean, they were probably going to be boned going into the season anyway.
Well, Anthony Costanzo like that?
Oh, my bad. Yeah, Anthony Costanzo, you know, top 25 left tackle. But in reality, though, like, but what Andrew Luck does, though, is he makes them competent. He makes them, I'm not saying a title contender, but he makes them an AFC South contender. He makes them, you know, they still have a chance to win 10-plus games with Andrew Luck. Without Andrew Luck, they don't have a chance to win, you know, three games, in my opinion. So, especially with a guy like Scott Tolzien, like, why completely give up on the season when, you know, if Andrew Luck misses the first three, four, or five games, you still would like to win two or three of them. Scott Tolzien is not going to help you win two or three of those games. He will help you lose them. So yeah,
I find it interesting given sort of how much better the AFC South has gotten, which is kind of a weird thing to say. But, I mean, the Colts have to watch out for the Tennessee Titans. They might have to watch out for the Houston Texans, depending on how things go with them. And so they could be in a situation where, like, one or two games could determine whether or not they make the playoffs. And given sort of – right. And given sort of Andrew Luck's really volatile playing style, I mean, you're definitely going to lose some games. You're not going to go 16-0 just because, you know, he's going to make some mistakes just by the style of play that he has. And so you probably also want a backup who not only has the ability to win those games, but maybe has that kind of same volatility. It doesn't matter how much you lose by if you lose, only that you can win some games. And so a volatile potential quarterback, like, say, Colin Kaepernick, sure, but also, like, maybe Zach Mettenberger. Like, you could avoid, you know, your Sean Hills and Christian Ponders, who would probably be fine backups somewhere with a good defense that can manage a game and potentially win one. But if you want, there are volatile backups out there that like to take chances. And I don't know, like, why, you know, Scott Tolzien is your answer. Like you said, they knew going into this offseason that this is something that they would need. I mean, Robert Griffin's out there. I mean, you may not win any games with him. You may accidentally win one or two. And I don't think that that's true, like Scott Tolzien. So yeah, it's weird. There's like available backup quarterbacks that are not, I guess, poison in Indiana, like Colin Kaepernick. They can take, and you're choosing to roll with Scott Tolzien. I don't know. Teams just generally are bad at managing situations. I feel like that's a fair assessment of most NFL teams.
Well, and we go into it. We talk about how some of these guys, there are some guys that aren't in the league right now that aren't signed that deserve to be, but then there's guys like a Scott Tolzien who has a job. That's, he's the starting quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts. And in all reality, he shouldn't either be on a roster or he should at least be a quarterback three.
Yeah.
So
like some of that is you've got young guys that are not any good that could develop. You're like your Mitch Leidners, I guess.
Oh, don't do that.
Or Wes Lunt, let's be fair. Who, you know, you don't want to throw into a game, potentially have tools that could develop into somebody. You also have guys that are really good at preparing the team for the game. So that's kind of why Kellen Moore has stuck around a lot, is he's evidently pretty phenomenal when it comes to doing whiteboard stuff. Those are all important functions of a backup. It's one reason I'm kind of surprised that Christian Ponder isn't signed. It's not so much that you throw him into a game, they'll help you win. Some backups are just really good at helping the starting quarterback and developing the offense and stuff like that. It's why so many backup quarterbacks have gone on to become coaches. But in situations where you know your backup needs to be game ready, you should get a game ready quarterback. I really don't care, you know, if Scott Tolzien's friggin' like Tom Brady on the whiteboard. It doesn't matter because you're going to need to win a couple of games. And it's not like Andrew Luck can't prepare for himself. So the priorities that a lot of people put on backup quarterbacks sometimes are a little bit different than the talent priorities that teams have. They have different motivations for signing particular backups. Some of them are developmental. You don't want to play them right away. Some of them are, you know, for the locker room or for the whiteboard or for game preparation. You don't want to play them. But, you know, some of them have to play, and they should treat the offseason like their backup is going to play.
And speaking of guys that we don't want to play, want to talk to about another situation, another team that has woefully managed a position or position group. And we wanted to try to get your take on Seattle and what it is they're doing with their offensive line, because we can't for the life of us understand why it seems as though they are purposely trying to field the least competent offensive line group in the entire NFL. And if they're trying to get your take on if there's, you know, a reason that you can see that they seem to be investing so little in protecting Russell Wilson.
I mean, the hot take is Russell Wilson looks a lot better behind a bad O-line, right? That's pretty exciting to watch. But the reasoning that they've kind of given, so they've kind of said the experiment is over, and then they put like their power forward at left tackle, right? And so the experiment is clearly not over. You had a guy who played 1 year at tight end in college football, played mostly basketball, and now he's your starting left tackle. And admittedly, he's the starting left tackle because I guess he beat somebody out in a competition. It's not like that was the plan. But, you know, they continue to try and turn defensive linemen into offensive tackles, turn tight ends into offensive tackles. That occasionally does work. It's not impossible. But it's imprecise. So the reason that they've given is there's just so few good offensive linemen in college. That the ones that come out that have played offensive line for, you know, 3-4 years have ingrained bad habits into their play. They're kind of uncoachable. You can't coach them in to being good, which I find kind of unusual. I mean, you take a look at people like Jason Spriggs, you take a look at like Jake Matthews, had a really bad rookie year. He's a pretty good tackle now. Even Tyron Smith didn't start out to be, you know, the player that he is right now. I find that really weird because they were all experienced tackles that had some pretty significant bad habits that got fixed. But you know, that's their argument, that, you know, you've got these guys who are not blank slates, that you have to rewire them. And there's so many bad offensive linemen in college that it's better to build from the ground up, which is kind of what the Vikings were kind of hoping that they would do with like TJ Clemmings. I guess that argument, like in a vacuum, has merit. It's clearly like not worked. And so they've started like actually playing offensive linemen on the offensive line. But, you know, Justin Britt is a center and he was a tackle. Ethan Posick is a tackle and he was a center. It's dumb, and it's really difficult to accuse an organization that's been so good at building nearly every other part of their roster of being really dumb at this. But I think they just kind of just got stuck on this one thing. Offensive linemen in college are bad. And they decided, well, there's some creative solutions to this. Let's draft, you know, Christian Sicoli, who had the highest spark score in history. He's a defensive lineman. Let's make him a center, like literally the hardest position for someone switching from defense to offense to learn. You know, I get that they kind of want to be creative with these solutions, but they might just have to bite the bullet, trade draft assets up, and find one of those few good offensive linemen that generally has good habits. There's not really much else they need to invest in with the team. I mean, people don't like the receiver core. I think it's good enough that you can trade away assets where you don't build up that receiver core right away, or, you know, shoot for it in free agency or something. They've obviously got great linebackers, defensive linemen in the secondary. They keep drafting secondary players. That's fine. You can do that late. You don't have to give up that many assets to, you know, forego late round picks to continue drafting the secondary players. But they really should just prioritize the offensive line in a way that doesn't feel like a mad science experience.
All right. That's all the random NFL stuff we wanted to talk to you about. So we're going to get to the hard-hitting questions now. And I need to know, how angry are you at Blair Walsh today?
I'm not angry. I don't really care that he, like, pointed at the – like, it's a kicker in a preseason game. More information came out that the Vikings were, I guess, taunting him, and it was all good natured, and that makes it seem better. But I was not mad in the first place, because if you get mad because of a kicker, I mean, that's your fault. They're living in your head now. I'm not mad.
All right, all right. And okay, next thing, I guess, just in general, what were your thoughts? I know you wrote an article, and we'll link to it in the show notes. But I guess, what were your thoughts on how the game went and your big takeaways?
Against the Seahawks, I mean, it went. I don't think that there were significant negative outcomes from players expected to start or contribute in significant ways that I hit the panic button. But also, it's pretty obvious that, you know, there were not significant positive outcomes. You wanted to see more from the defense, especially Mackenzie Alexander. I kind of wanted to see more from Terrence Newman before he went out. You wanted to see, you know, the offensive linemen do well enough that by the time you got to the red zone, that you could produce. And they got to the red zone, they didn't produce. That's not entirely the offensive line's fault, but I don't think they played as well as a lot of people think. They certainly played a lot better than they did in the Buffalo game, and that's maybe the best positive takeaway. But that kind of just, I think that kind of gets taken away by how I think Bradford played. I think that, you know, he didn't play, you know, to his best like he did in that Green Bay game. You know, I think that the only chance that he took that was successful was a result of a blown coverage. And, you know, people are giving him a lot of credit for that. And, you know, credit to play action that it worked, but I don't think that that showcases a lot in terms of Bradford's risk taking. And then he almost threw an interception to Richard Sherman. He threw an iffy one-on-one ball to Michael Floyd on a well, you know, when he was well covered. And so, you know, that's whatever. Maybe the best positive takeaway is that the running game looks really good, and I'm kind of excited for that. When Latavius Murray comes back, you'll get goal line production probably, and that'll result in points. So I don't think there are significant positives or negatives to take away. Individual players like Dalvin Cook stood out. Bucky Hodges obviously stood out. And, you know, Stephon Diggs, you know, obviously did really, really well. A lot of people like how Pat Elflin played. I don't have significant problems with how he played. I don't think that he played kind of lights out or anything like that. But it's good if he ends up starting the season and he continues to play the preseason at that level of play. That's a good thing, because that means, you know, your drafted rookie center is already probably an average center in the league. And you've got some pretty decent options at the guard position if Joe Berger doesn't work out. Berger played a lot better in this game than he has in training camp. So, you know, there's definitely positives to take from it, and maybe more positives than negatives. But I don't think there are like broad sweeping conclusions on the offense or the defense to make.
And JR, how about yourself, man? You also wrote an article both about the game, and then were inspired by Pat Elflin, and also wrote an article about him. So what are your thoughts? What were your takeaways about the game, and also about the starting center competition?
You know, the biggest thing that I love seeing was just the progress of the 2017 rookie class. You know, you're seeing Dalvin Cook stand out. You're seeing Elflin stand out. You know, those guys being your top two picks. It's really good seeing those guys stand out. You know, I thought Elflin played really well. The only time he gave up pressure was when Bradford had the long completion down the sideline to Stephon Diggs. Other than that, I thought he played really well. He was really good in the run game, decent in pass protection. Like I said, he gave up the one pressure on the long completion to Diggs, but I thought he played well other than that one pressure. There's some other guys that stood out. You know, I thought Nick Easton played really well, you know, considering that he was playing a new position. He hasn't played left guard in a game before in a while, you know, filling in for Boone. I think that kind of put Boone on notice, in my opinion. Not saying that, you know, they're going to get rid of him or cut him or anything like that. But, you know, it proved that he was expendable, in my opinion. Just seeing him play well in that interior of Easton, Elflin, and Berger, it seemed like a really good mix. They had really good chemistry together, and I haven't seen them block up the run that well in a really long time. There really was gaping holes and run lanes for Cook and McKinnon to go through. And that's something that we really haven't seen from our offensive line in a really long time. Rimmers played better. And Rashad Hill, he played okay. We really didn't call his name a lot, which is a good thing, you know, coming from the tackle positions and what we've seen from, you know, that position in the past. Our secondary really worries me. We know Harrison Smith is a stud already. But our other corner situation opposite Xavier Rhodes is really troubling right now. You know, Williams made a fantastic catch on Xavier Rhodes. There really wasn't anything else he could do there. He had good coverage. But, you know, Terrence Newman is really starting to struggle and his age is really starting to show. And, you know, Reef has said that throughout training camp that his age is really starting to show. And we've seen them have interest in Tremaine Brock. You know, they struck out on that. You know, the Seattle Seahawks didn't let him out of town. Trey Waynes has, you know, been up and down in his tenure with the Vikings, and hopefully he comes off this injury and proves something to us these final two preseason games. But our secondary really worries me right now, especially that spot opposite of Xavier Rhodes. The run defense was bad to start the game, and I don't want to pin it all on him, but I think he's a big weakness in that area, and that's Tom Johnson. He's the guy, you know, manning that three technique spot, and we all know he's best suited in passing down situations, but when he's asked to take on double teams and clog up those gaps in the running game, he just can't do it. And they insert a guy like Jaleel Johnson who comes in and has immediate success in the run defense. He really stood out, and I would really like to see him get some more reps with the ones, and hopefully the dream is to get him to eventually overtake Tom Johnson and be your full-time three technique and get Tom Johnson in that third down pass rushing role as a defensive tackle.
That's awesome. Miles, what about you, man? What were your big takeaways? I know that you had to watch it out amongst people and weren't too happy about that, but were you able to focus in on anything and have any takeaways?
Oh, yeah. Definitely thought, you know, JR touched on a couple of things that I wanted to touch on. Nick Easton, I think him playing, you know, him moving over to left guard, I was a little worried. Didn't know how that would go, and it went really well. A lot. I think, you know, there's a little less pressure on him moving from center to guard, and, you know, maybe a little less to think about for him, which could be a good thing. You know, change the scenery, change the pace. And then I really thought the Jaleel Johnson situation, you know, with Tom Johnson. I know when we first drafted Jaleel Johnson, my biggest takeaway was if he's going to play right away, his biggest impact is going to come against the run. He still needs to develop as a pass rusher, but the biggest thing for him is, you know, he's a run stopper. He can get in there and wreak havoc on that, which we saw. You know, it might have been against the twos and threes, but he definitely showed the flashes and the ability to do that, which, you know, what his college tape said the same thing. So I was really excited about that. Another young guy, you know, to kind of that started too, you know, part of the rookie class that I know some people are talking about is Ben Gideon. I think he's a big one there, just because you're looking for that spot. Who can help stop the run at the linebacker position, you know, to fill in for Chad Greenway? And I think Ben Gideon can do that. You know, he still needs some work, you know, in pass coverage and all that. But I think the biggest thing for him is to be able to help stop the run and be in there for 15 to 20 plays if need be, and not be a complete liability. And that's the biggest thing that spot is really missing, is to not be a liability, which unfortunately Chad Greenway ended up being, you know, last season. So I hope Ben Gideon continues to get that opportunity, and I, you know, hope he continues to flash. And lastly, you know, touching on the secondary, I think it sounds like Jaron Kearse has been playing pretty well too. So I think that's an exciting thing. I know a lot of people are all about, you know, moving, finding a new replacement for Anderson Dejo. Kearse is looking like a lot better than he was last season. I think that's a big plus, just because he can help in the run game too, and he can be effective on special teams. So I was a big fan of what he did.
And last but certainly not least, Saxy Prince. Can you tell us what you thought about the special teams play in the preseason game? I'm kidding, man. What were your actual takes?
No, I definitely was more encouraged by what I saw offensively. I tweeted about it and I commented on the interior that I like the Easton Elf line Berger interior, because it just seemed like they were pushing the pile a little bit more as far as pass protection. I saw Bradford have more room to step up than I maybe have seen in the past. I'm becoming a little bit more encouraged by the zone blocking. I know the last couple of years, you know, we've been heavy, you know, power sets and whatnot. Which is always funny to me, considering, you know, how hard these guys lifted, and a lot of these guys were coming off pectoral injuries, but yet we're telling them to push the pile. So it was just good to see the run game evolve into something a little bit more threatening. So it's something that I can foresee defenses having to account for a little bit more. I would have liked to see Dalvin Cook out wide maybe a few more times. Or just a little bit more, as well as getting Jet in the mix for there. As far as defense, I think we all know elephant in the room, like you guys mentioned. Secondary, it might become problematic, which is probably why you guys probably either read or have seen that Zimmer's been spending a little bit more time with them, because I think it's necessary. If Xavier Rose misses any time, Trey Waynes, I guess, the secondary definitely does deplete a little bit more. Harrison Smith. So, I mean, I guess I was a little bit more, like Arif had said, I think I was a little bit more encouraged with what I saw. Case Keenum is definitely running away with a second quarterback job. I still don't like what I've seen out of Taylor Heinicke, and I know there was a lot of positive vibes around him coming to see him again after he hasn't played since for at least a year. But, you know, he just looks jittery in the pocket. He's rolling out too often. His passes look off target. And I wasn't surprised by them, you know, maybe bringing in a quarterback. I know that Heinicke might be injured, but I mean, hey, if you can bring in another quarterback that can compete for that third and potentially even that second spot, I'm all for it. I'm not saying that guy necessarily is Mitch Leiner, but, you know, from what I've seen with Heinicke, I'm not surprised that, you know, they decided to bring in another quarterback. Special teams, if I can
We don't want your special teams takes, Ankin. Blair Walsh is all the special teams.
I do like
that. We don't want special teams takes, man.
But I'm saying I'm team Kai Forbath. That's my special teams take.
Oh, thank you. You're
welcome.
I mean, everyone mentioned the secondary, I guess. Arif, how nervous should we be about the Vikings secondary going into the season?
I mean, like, defense is very often a game of, like, weak links, right? And so if the rest of your team – and that's not entirely true. You've got some creators in the defensive line who can just produce. But, you know, if the entirety of, you know, your linebacker core and your defensive line are all good players, if you've got one, you know, shutdown corner on one side, you've got two great safeties or whatever, and then you've got two bad cornerbacks, one on the nickel, one on the outside, you know, you could be put into some pretty bad situations. So from that perspective – yeah, I think that there's a lot to be concerned about. I don't really know what's going to happen at that outside corner spot. I mean, Trey Waynes is going to come back, but, you know, we don't know if he's actually improved. He seemed better in camp. But, you know, we're going to want to see a couple of more preseason games before we can say, hey, Trey Waynes is kind of like coming into his own. Mackenzie Alexander obviously has looked pretty awful. I mean, the Bills game, I don't know if I had any solid takes about his play. But, you know, in this Seahawks game, he looked pretty bad. There's enough devastating slot corners in the league slot receivers in the league and receivers that you can, you know, pull from the outside into the slot that it can become a pretty significant issue. So I would be worried that this could take the Vikings defense sort of out of top five territory, right? It's not as if the Vikings defense is going to be bad. That clearly not. But if you're going to rely on your offense to be good enough, then your defense has to be pretty great. And if the defense is not pretty great, you're putting a lot more on Bradford's shoulders. You're putting a lot more on this offensive line that's had, you know, one bad game and one pretty decent game. Putting a lot more on, you know, people like Dalvin Cook, who's a rookie and a pretty good one. But probably not enough to just pull this offense from mediocre to average to above average. So I think that if Mackenzie Alexander continues to play at this level, if Trey Waynes it hasn't developed into his own, because, you know, we saw, you know, some pretty big missteps in training camp too. If Trey Waynes is anything less than a solid number two, then I think you're at the spot where in games against pretty good teams, of which I guess there's one in the division, maybe two if you count the Lions, then you don't really have a shot to make the playoffs. And if you go 8-8 one year and you don't have a shot to make the playoffs, you know, the next year, then that Sam Bradford trade is looking a lot worse through no fault of Bradford himself, who I think has played to the quality of that trade. But the Vikings aren't getting what they need because either their investment around the team isn't good enough or you know, just some surprising mishaps that, you know, they couldn't have foreseen coming. So, yeah, I think there's a pretty significant worry, not for the defense, because I think the defense will continue to be above average, but for what it means in terms of what it demands of the offense and how that'll play off in the playoff race.
And in terms of the offense, I know that we focus a lot on Bradford. He's the starting quarterback, but what are your thoughts on Pat Shurmur and his scheme and I guess the possibilities of him leading an above average offense?
I mean, we haven't really seen a ton of Pat Shurmur as an offensive coordinator of the league. I mean, we've seen him in St. Louis. We've seen him in Cleveland. We kind of saw him in Philadelphia, but there's not like a huge track record. What we've seen so far in training camp has been fairly standard, which isn't a bad thing, especially, you know, with a quarterback like Sam Bradford and multi-capable backs like Dalvin Cook and Latavius Murray. I don't think that there's anything super significant to take away with regards to Shurmur's scheme. I will say that I really enjoy kind of the number of outside zone looks we're getting in the run game. That's clearly where Dalvin Cook, you know, played his best ball at Florida State. It's clearly something he's comfortable with right now. And so I think that the way things are developing, it's really nice. Now, as to whether or not we're going to see a more aggressive offense, kind of like they promised us early in the offseason, they promised us again at training camp. They kind of referenced it a little bit, you know, before this first preseason game. I don't know. I don't know that we're going to actually see that many more explosive plays. And the Vikings certainly have the capability for that. We may see that in the run game. We may see more, you know, runs of over 10 yards, especially, you know, kind of given what we saw in the Seattle game. But in the passing game, you know, Bradford consistently, you know, chooses not to take chances when they're available to him, except, like I said, on that Stephon Diggs throw that I think was more kind of the product of fortune than I think it was of skill. The chances that Bradford took, you know, in this game didn't pan out. And I'm kind of worried that, you know, that's going to train him to continue to not take chances. So we'll see. You know, I'd like a more explosive offense because I think that's really the only way that the offense can move out of sort of the average-ish zone into something kind of truly threatening, because I think the weapons are pretty good. You know, I like Stephon Diggs a lot. You know, I think that, you know, right now he's a top 15 receiver in the league. And I think that, you know, he can turn into a top 10 receiver. You know, I like Adam Thielen a lot. He's definitely a top 20 receiver in the league, might be a top 15, certainly can turn into one of those. Obviously Dalvin Cook, you know, has all the potential in the world right now to turn into one of the league's top backs, and the offensive line is kind of giving him enough room to do that. And so the weapons are there to turn this into a pretty good offense. But I don't know that the combination of Shurmur, who has had quarterbacks throw shorter under him than when they're not with him, and Bradford, who had the lowest average depth of target in the league last year and continues to have really low third and long conversion rates, really low average depth of target. I'm not sure that they're going to produce an explosive offense just because they say they will, because their history and their habits tell us that they probably won't. But it would be nice if they did.
All righty. And you had some choice words for Prince Yinka on the Twitter.com based on him sending out cryptic tweets that got people all worked up on Vikings Twitter about an impending quarterback controversy. So let's say what Yinka is hinting at is actually true. Teddy may be cleared to practice or do more. What are your thoughts on how the Vikings should handle kind of this impending QB controversy going forward?
One, Yinka is a mark, and I stand by that. Two... If Teddy's clear to play clear to practice, and, you know, I think the contractual term is perform football services, which always sounds a little weird. There's a couple of problems for the Vikings. The first is that they're in an awkward situation with regards to the comprehensive bargaining agreement. So a lot of people, they take a look at the rule that defines the physically unable to perform list and very reasonably come to the conclusion that once you're on the physically unable to perform list, and you're in your final year of the contract, a team can choose to toy your contract into the next year. Because it says, if a player is put on the PUP list at the beginning of the season and is physically unable to perform football services by the sixth game, a team can choose to toll their contract into the next year under the terms of the final year of their contract once more. That makes sense, but there's clearly a designation between capital P-U-P, physically unable to perform, and the phrase physically unable to perform football services in the CBA. There's a lot of precedent for using that phrase in a lot of different ways. So, for example, if you take a look at the injured reserve or injury settlement parts of the CBA, they use the same phrase and they talk about neutral doctors providing arbitration for whether or not a player can be deemed physically unable to perform football services outside of the context of the PUP list. So if a player is on PUP, that's just a status designation that they have, not an indication that they physically can play football. That's a completely different thing. And that may prevent his contract from tolling. And obviously, that puts the Vikings in a super awkward spot when it comes to free agency, because both quarterbacks will be hitting free agency. If the Vikings might be able to win this legal battle, initially I thought that they definitely would, you know, against the NFLPA, who don't want this contract to toll for obvious labor union reasons. And I've moved kind of in the direction of, I'm not really sure the NFL and the Vikings can win this legal battle against the NFLPA because of how the terms are defined throughout the CBA. And so I think it is, in fact, more likely under the scenario that Yinka keeps implying, that the Vikings may have to deal with Bridgewater hitting free agency. And obviously for Bridgewater, that's a good thing. He's hitting free agency at age 25 in the March of 2018, as opposed to at age 27 in March of 2020. It's always good for players to have more agency because they can leverage that for more money. And he can negotiate a short-term contract on a prove-it deal and get an even better contract kind of later on in case teams have too much uncertainty about him. With regards to how it impacts the season, I think it's pretty unlikely that for the first couple of games you would see Teddy Bridgewater play just because of, you know, readiness concerns. I know Bradford came in and played basically right away, sat for a week. But, you know, Sean Hill was bad and Bradford's not. And so that gives, you know, the Vikings a little bit more time to get Teddy under control and learn the offense and stuff like that. And I mean, I think Bradford's fine and I like Teddy a lot more, but I don't think the difference with them is so extraordinary. You need to rush to get Teddy onto the field unless like some stuff happens, right? Like Bradford like magically becomes just really bad. And you're just like, well, I guess we have to put Teddy in. Like, that makes sense. But I think that for the most part, we're not going to see these questions like pop up inside the Vikings organization for at least a couple of weeks. Obviously, for the fans, it's going to be hell. People will argue about it. And, you know, we've all staked our sides already. But, you know, we really don't know, right? Because, you know, Teddy's ready to play. That doesn't mean he's ready to play at the level that he would have been in the 2016 preseason. And so we don't know, you know, how good he can turn out to be and whether or not he'll be as good as he was and whether or not that's better than Bradford and, you know, so on and so forth. So it'll certainly be an interesting time for Vikings fans, but I don't know what time hasn't been. Those are kind of the takeaways. One, Yink is a mark. Two, A, the Vikings are in really bad free agency situation. Two, B, the Vikings are kind of in a weird quarterback competition situation. But I would imagine and probably even would advocate that they play Bradford for a couple of weeks anyway while Teddy gets his sea legs under him. And, you know, maybe they can use one of their contact practices, not to see if Teddy can get hit or anything like that, because you're not going to hit a quarterback in practice, but to see how well he takes, you know, people throwing pads at him and however else you tend to prepare quarterbacks for getting hit in games.
Arif, I think the technical term is actually douche. I think you use it the proper way on.
They're not mutually exclusive. I called you a douche on Twitter, and I was right about that. But if I wanted to be more precise, I'd call you a mark, and that's what I'm doing here.
As far as I think I've touched on it with you guys offline, but I'm more so on actually going against the Vikings and the NFL in this situation where I wouldn't want Teddy's contract at all. You know, as much as I love him, you know, in purple and stuff, I think it would set a precedent for, you know, future situations like this. Not that it happens often, it's obviously very rare, but, you know, just the extension that it could provide for owners and the NFL to continue to leverage players to, you know, again, not pay them and then kind of continue to retain their services year after year. Like I said, it is a very rare thing, but I'm actually rooting against the Vikings in this situation for the purpose of, you know, obviously the CBA is not the greatest for the players. It was a horrible deal that the NFLPA struck. I think that they should have you know, did a lockout for a lot longer than they did, which I think that's where we're heading in 2021. I think it was obviously more confirmed this week, but specifically about the situation, I just, just past Teddy Bridgewater or any other player, you know, I do care about the players. So I do want to see them in positions where, you know, they're getting paid what they deserve. They're not being held ransom essentially for, you know, a situation that they didn't cause. So yeah, I'm definitely kind of rooting against the Vikings in this situation.
So given that both quarterbacks will likely be hitting free agency come year end, start with Arif. I guess what level of play would you need to see from Sam Bradford for you to feel comfortable with the Vikings signing him to a big money long-term extension?
I think that generally speaking, you'd want him to be a top 10 quarterback. Specifically speaking, you'd want him to improve in those areas that he's been criticized for throughout his career. You know, his inability to convert third and long, which incidentally, by the way, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league at converting third and short. So I find that, you know, kind of fascinating, if only because maybe he kind of makes up for it if you've got a good enough running game on first down and stuff like that. And maybe that plays a role into whether or not the Vikings, you know, are willing to forego some issues on third and long by being able to set up good third and short situations with like Dalvin Cook and that offensive line. But, you know, I think that generally speaking, that's kind of where you want to see improvement. You want to see him see improvement in being more aggressive, taking shots downfield. He's one of the more accurate quarterbacks when he does do it. He's pretty good at deep throwing. But you want to be comfortable that he is a quarterback that can win you games instead of manage games that have already been kind of won. And I'm not confident that that's who the Vikings have right now. You know, obviously, you know, that 5-0 run, you know, Sam Bradford had, you know, 1.5 just extraordinary games. But, you know, for the most part, I think it's pretty clear that the defense did a lot to win those games. And they scored in an unsustainable manner that we're probably not going to see continue in 2017 and certainly didn't see continue throughout the 2016 season. And so you want a guy who, you know, can regularly shoulder the burden of winning. Like a pretty good example of that is Tom Brady, who, I mean, obviously he's won a lot of games, but it's really important to point out that, you know, for most of the game, he's kind of a game manager, and that's totally fine. He's the best at it. But in critical situations, either in sort of small critical downs, like 3rd and 7 and in the middle of the game and the game is tied, you know, he delivers. But also in 2-minute situations, he's pretty astounding. He can become a fairly, you know, risk-heavy, aggressive quarterback when he needs to be. And so it's not that Bradford always needs to be, you know, a guy who's throwing bombs downfield. He just needs to do it when it's appropriate. And I would be very comfortable with the Vikings from a team management perspective, seeing that kind of growth from Sam Bradford and prioritizing his contract over Teddy Bridgewater's in the offseason if that happens in free agency. But I think without it, I don't think the Vikings are in a position where they can just rely on their defense to continue to win games and magic themselves into the playoffs. You know, the goal is not to go, you know, 9-7 and bounce out. It's to win the Super Bowl, and I'm not sure that Bradford, as he's constructed as a quarterback, can do that. So you kind of take a bigger chance with the unknown, probably talented Teddy Bridgewater, and I'm saying probably because we don't know how he's going to return from his injury, and see if he can develop into that guy, because certainly it looked like he was doing that in the 2016 preseason. And if he can't, you've probably got the best backup in the league, and you can just draft, you know, friggin' whoever turns up to be good in the draft. Baker Mayfield, I have no idea.
And JR, how about you? You're a noted Teddy Bridgewater enthusiast, but you've also said multiple times on Twitter that Sam goes out there and balls. It's his team, his job. What does that mean to you when you say if Sam goes out there and balls? Like, what do you need to see from him for you to personally feel comfortable that it's his team and Teddy gets traded to New England?
You know, the Vikings are kind of in a bad spot just because, you know, you have Teddy sitting on ice. We really don't know how he's going to return from his injury. But, you know, Sam Bradford's situation is really fascinating and kind of interesting. You know, we've discussed this a lot of times. He's kind of stuck in the situation where he's in Philadelphia all over again. And what I mean by that is, you know, you have a young quarterback behind you, and, you know, the ball is really in your court. How you play this year determines your future. And, you know, he kind of got an unfair shake when he was in Philly. Everybody knew Carson Wentz was the future, but nobody knew, you know, he was going to take over that fast. And nobody seen the trade of Sam Bradford coming. And, you know, we're not there yet. And who knows if we'll ever get there. But all the pressure is on Sam Bradford. And if he plays well this year, the Vikings are his team going forward. He'll get his money, whatever he's looking for, him and Tom Condon, who's his agent. He'll get his long-term deal. But I just want him to see – I just want to see him play well in the areas we always talked about and criticize him for. You know, late-game situations, third and long situations, and just being able to win games and being able to take over games. And he hasn't really shown to be able to do that at this point. The only time he showed that was in his first game against Green Bay. But I just want to—I just want him to be able to sustain drives, being able to take over games and not just always rely on the defense to score points or special teams to score points in order to win games. So that's the biggest thing I want to see from him.
Miles Yinka, you guys have anything different to add there? Or is it basically the same thing? You want him to see more clutch, better third down, more aggressiveness, taking some more chances?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, we touched. I actually don't want Sam to be a game manager because I think that his, I think what he has as far as his physical tools allow him to be a little bit more than a game manager. But I think it that to pair what Rifa said is he has to have the, you know, he has to have the desire to kind of push the ball a little further down the field and you know, work on some of those areas that he struggles with greatly. I think that's really where, for a lot of people, it's like, I want to see us go to, you know, the playoffs, go to the NFC Championship. For me, it's all just about Sam's play. What does he do? You know, what are the numbers saying for him? That's really what would take for me to be like, okay, this is Sam's team, move forward with him, potentially draft another guy so that those two can compete. But yeah, that's, for me, that's really what it would take.
And Miles, bring us home, man.
I mean, everybody hit it on the head, I think. You know, I agree with kind of everybody's takes on that. I kind of want to jump it more into like the offseason, the potential hypotheticals. You know, let's say Sam plays, you know, well enough. But let's just say both head into free agency. If you haven't seen Teddy Bridgewater play at all this season, you know, in the regular season, hypothetically the fourth preseason game, which I don't think is going to happen anyways, you can't warrant giving him the – personally, I don't think you could warrant giving him the franchise tag. That's just out of the question right there, because that's just $20-some million guaranteed for him, which is more than what the fifth year option would have been anyways. So that's out of the question for Teddy. But I think for a guy like Sam, no matter, almost he would have to play completely terrible for me for the franchise tag to be out of question. Because I think it's something that will definitely be in play. And I think the Vikings will use as their, you know, so-and-so like trump card in case, you know, things don't shake out their way during the regular season and potentially the playoffs. They'll use that as like a scapegoat to make sure that they have that established quarterback in place. But with the Bridgewater situation, I think it's more of, if you do get a chance to see him, if he does come off the pup at some point, you know, I don't expect, you know, based on everything we're hearing, I don't expect his contract to toll in the next season. Get him on that, you know, try to, you know, get him in and say, hey, Teddy, here's that 1 year, potentially 2 year deal that's really incentivated where you can give him, you know, you don't have to give him a lot of guaranteed money, but a lot of that money he can earn, you know, through playing time and incentives and all that stuff, just to kind of give him a show of faith of, hey, we're going to give you an opportunity to, you know, to make this happen next season, you know, and then, you know, your backup plan there is, you know, you draft somebody significantly high, or you go in and dip into free agency again and bring somebody, you know, another guy like a potentially like a, I don't even know who it could be at this point, you know, but like a Brian Hoyer type, which I know Jason likes, you know, as like a stopgap quarterback, you know, someone that can be a backup that can, you know, be efficient enough to jump in and win you some games if they need to. So I think, I don't know, you know, since you guys touched on all the other stuff with the Bradford situation and everything, I was just looking more of, you know, the future after 2018. That'd be kind of how I see it playing out. It's going to be a tough situation no matter what.
And to be fair, Miles, I don't really like Brian Hoyer so much as I like pointing out that Brian Hoyer's career stats and Sam Bradford's career stats are nearly identical career stats, because people don't like hearing that very much. So, yeah, it's just fun, because if you don't like Brian Hoyer, it's very tough to cape up for Sam when their career stats are the same. But that's pretty much it. I think that's what we wanted to run through with Arif today. While we got you, Arif, I guess, what do you have upcoming? Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, I'm going to write about actually the very thing I mentioned about the CBA over at Zone Coverage. And I'll probably break down the center battle because I've got a write-up on, you know, how Easton and Elflin did in the Bills game. I kind of want to rewatch the Seahawks game. See, you know, maybe, you know, everybody, you know, has been more impressed with Elflin than I am. So there's a good chance that I'm kind of wrong in my initial take that his game was just okay. So I want to rewatch that and put together kind of my thoughts on, you know, what this means for the center battle going forward. So those are the two pieces coming up.
Wait, so Arif, you didn't know that Pat Elflin is a Pro Bowler already?
It's true. Yeah, I guess I missed the memo.
Okay.
JR, resend the memo. Arif didn't get it.
He was awesome.
Kind of like the show notes, huh?
Why do you want Arif to say mean things to you, Yinka?
He already does. You guys don't actually understand how often he and I text.
We just turn this into a dunk on Yinka podcast. I'm all about that.
You mean it's not already?
Every week.
It's a good podcast.
It is a good podcast.
So Yinka, remember when you went to training camp?
Yeah, remember that time.
And
I remember that.
I feel like you talked to somebody at training camp or something, and you said there was going to be like an article or something. What are you working on?
It's coming.
Any upcoming projects that you anything you're going to write?
Training camp recap, Yinka? Oh, I'd love to read your training camp recap.
Yeah, it's going to be a full blown. It's going to look really similar to your huge training camp preview, Arif. It's going to be very similar to that. It might even have your name on the front of it. So we'll see how that goes. But no, I'm still kind of working through. I'm linking my Teddy piece with kind of this narrative that I'm trying to have go with it. So just have to work on the creative side a little bit more so than just looking up stats and whatnot. So.
All right, Miles, JR, how about y'all? Anything upcoming?
Yeah, I have the the 49ers Vikings preview on Saturday.
For me, I'm going to jump into like a more of a regular season preview kind of once the third preseason game kind of plays out, just because, you know, at that point we won't really see a lot of the starters play in the fourth game, so I want to jump in to kind of preview the Saints game.
Well, all right. Well, that is all we have for this episode. Arif, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And it's always nice to have somebody else come on and give Yinka some crap. So you're welcome back anytime.
All right. I can make fun of his. I think he likes Naruto, right? Naruto? How you pronounce that, Yinka?
Naruto, man. Get it straight.
Yeah. Let's talk about that for an entire hour.
Now I feel like JR. I feel like JR now when we're talking about Game of Thrones. Because I have no idea what's happening right now.
There's dragons now. That's what I hear. I haven't watched in like the last two seasons. There's dragons now. People are very excited about these dragons. I don't know anywhere else.
Reef, you haven't watched the last couple seasons, man?
Yeah.
You need to hop on.
No, man. I just want to make
fun of that last episode was crazy.
The javelin.
Yeah, well, there's some people who love the last episode, some people who hate the last episode. I can just avoid all that by not watching it.
Too predictable for me. What I loved about Game of Thrones the most was how unpredictable that show is. That entire
I was calling things.
Everything was predictable.
Yeah, I was calling things out. I'm just like, Daenerys is about to show up here. This is what this was here. Yeah, episode was definitely predictable.
It's like they turned Game of Thrones for this last season. They turned it over to like the writers from Sons of Anarchy or something.
Right, so yeah, because like, they're ahead of the books, right? So
it's action packed every episode, but it doesn't really feel like the same show.
You guys are really selling me on this. Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, you'll enjoy it, but it's not the same show.
Right.
But that's pretty much it before we get completely off track here and turn this into a Game of Thrones pod. Arif, thanks again for coming on. Listeners, thanks for checking out this episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast, and we'll be back soon.